I think the volume on that started very low, and my inner board op, that's kind of driving me nuts, but I've been out of radio long enough where I don't care.
I'm honestly curious how many listeners have purchased this intro track on iTunes just based on...
Do you mean Beautiful Creation by Gray Sky Eternal, Howard? Is that what you're saying? All you have to do is go to your iTunes app on your iProduct and purchase it?
I think for last season when we did the football show and I had an ad up for Gray Sky Eternal, we had 2 click-throughs in 4 months. 2 people actually looked at the album and nobody bought it.
You don't even mean purchase, exactly. You mean a click-through.
They were like, what is this band? Yeah, no.
Answer, started, something yeah. I'm not buying.
Is apparently. This clean? Is this episode clean?
We have to put this one on tonight, so this is a good one. I know, I really had an urge to F-bomb it up, too. It's very strange you say that. Usually I come on and I'm like, cool with the clean ones, and today, yeah, I wanted to come out dirty. I guess for today's show, again, this is Papa's Basement. We didn't even say that yet. It's Papa's Basement. It's a Guy Talk podcast, if you will. You listen to Howard Stern, Corolla, anything like that. You get the gist of what we are. We try to be good. We don't have to go back and edit ums and ahs. Not that we don't make them, we just leave them in. pure contempt for the listener. Show's site is inpapasbasement.com. Go there for all of our contact info, all of our old episodes, bunch of our writing. So, yeah, that's it. You're all caught up. I wanted to start the show with minutes.
Minutes.
Can we do that? Can we start a show
about?
With minutes?
Like, are you reviewing the last episode? Like, what
is
what
that
do you mean,
what minutes mean? I've watched a lot of TV, and you say, I'm reviewing the minutes. And it sounds like you're going to list what's happening. Am I wrong when we review the minutes? Does that mean we have to go over what happened last episode?
Yeah, you have to approve the recorded document stating what happened at the last meeting. So everybody has to vote on their recollection of what happened at the last meeting. And
really?
Usually the person who took the minutes, the secretary, has the best memory. And you try to pick somebody that you trust that will not lie about what happened at the last meeting. So you don't have to take notes. This is like... I've done a lot of student organizations in college and law school.
This is your inner lawyer coming out.
Well, I've never been the secretary. I've always just been like, who of my friends?
Is that because they don't trust you and your pot-addled memory?
I'm horrible at writing down minutes. I'm like, huh? What? Oh, I got to write that down. Dang. Yeah, no, I'm horrible at it.
If I were trusted to write anything, you would just see the scratch pad from The Big Lebowski. Who was it? Jackie Hornberg? Who was the porn magnate?
Oh, right.
And he's just taking these notes like, uh-huh, uh-huh. And then Lebowski does a little trace to see the picture, and he just drew a stick figure with a heart on.
I mean, the one thing I'll do is take notes that I understand, and yet, like, I refuse to reinterpret them for other people's benefit.
I like how you said pipples. It was almost peoples. It rhymed with nipples the way you said it. Well, I guess this would count as minutes. Then I need to thank you. I think last week I talked about Wayne Static dying of, again, something you put in your arm using a syringe, but we can't conclude it was a drug overdose. But I was kind of being faced, I was facing my own mortality because I was just waking up snoring all the time in the middle of the night, like gagging for breath. And I was like, it's either apnea or something's going on, but it will kill me fast.
Right.
And you said, hey, you know what, you fat F. Start drinking a lot of green tea, at least right before bed.
Okay.
And so help me God, any night that I've put down green tea right before bed, don't get me wrong, I've been up to piss like a racehorse 4 hours later.
Right.
But I'm not waking myself up with my snoring anymore.
Okay.
So
you're just sitting in a pool of urine. Like, ooh.
Every dream, 10 minutes after I close my eyes, I'm just like, wow, urinating against this brick wall feels awesome. Why are you here, Elvis? And then I wake up and yeah, I've almost soiled myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for that, for real. Like I know we sound like best of friends on air. And I'm not saying we've hit a rift like, you know, Don and Mike near the end or an Opie and Anthony near the end. We just don't talk that much outside of the show. We both have women that eat our lives.
Well, we're also trying to make more money outside the show. And the show isn't where we would each want it to be in order to like put more time into like our time together. So this is our way to chill on the mic while we catch up.
Exactly. Two birds, one stone.
Yeah.
It's like telling a girlfriend you're spending quality time with her as you clean the house or some crap you don't
exactly.
want to do. You're like, what do you mean we have to hang out later? That was our date. And then she dumps you. for being a piece of garbage. But yeah, thank you for that. I really, the one time I didn't do it, 10 minutes after I nodded off, I woke myself up with my own snoring. And the green tea seems to have really worked.
Yeah.
So again, to all of you out there, all men who have breasts and you shouldn't have them, if you find yourself snoring a lot, just chug. I've been double bagging too.
That seems excessive to me.
Not sexually. Never that. Never even a single bag in that department. But yeah, I'll do the double bags. I don't know. I get the green tea from the Costco. So whatever, it just seems like a flimsy tea if I do one. And whenever I go to the Asian coffee shop, they make me pull out two green tea bags for them to brew for me.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean.
And they're Asians. Okay. They know what to do with green tea.
Okay. Yeah, some bags are only built for like a 6-ounce cup, so.
Possibly. Yeah, so I have a big coffee mug.
I am Asian. I understand how these measurements work.
Okay, so. Yeah. Mine is gigantic. It could double as a chamber pot. In fact, I should just drink the thing, then leave it on the floor so I can piss on it in the middle of the night.
What sucks is green tea is the same color as urine, so you might one day confuse the two.
I am wanting that. I am daring that to happen.
Ew.
You know why? Half an episode done right there. It'd just be you going, well, what does it taste like? And I'd be like, salty like the sea, my friend. Salty like the sea, but warm as chicken soup. And then we would lose our four listeners. I joke, by the way, I know that on the last episode I threw really profound. I refer to everyone by their Twitter handles.
Yeah.
Half the time I don't even remember Really Profound's real name, and I've met the man in real life.
Wow.
Yeah. Like right now I'm not remembering. I shouldn't have said that.
But no, our top interaction is on Twitter, man.
It's David. See,
there you go.
There you go. Yeah, Twitter's the best way to reach anyone these days. Except for you. You have your chimeric Twitter handle. No one can keep track of it. Vinny Van Gogh currently.
I might have to change that back. Vinny Van Gogh is not going so well on the crowdfunding website, so.
Vinny Van Gogh broke.
Yeah. I'm supposed to do a feature on Tim Trueheart. He was a guest on the show recently. I'm supposed to appear on one of his podcasts. So am I. Oh yeah, we're doing different weeks, but for mine, we're supposed to talk about like my crowdfunding campaign for a web series.
Oh, that, how much have you pulled in?
It's somewhere around $44.
How much did I count for?
You accounted for 40.
There we go.
Hey,
don't worry. They're having me on to talk about podcast monetization.
I also...
Yeah, exactly.
Of the other $4...
Why not have Dahmer on to talk about not murdering brunette women?
So you gave 40, and of the other $4, I gave 2 in order to make sure that I was receiving the payment. Because I wasn't. It actually was a good thing I did that. I hadn't properly set up my PayPal account. So.
Oh, life is horrible. It's so bad.
I should try to promote that harder. So, but I probably will just end up having to switch my Twitter handle quietly back to one of the old renditions. Maybe I'll get one like you're saying where people can remember it.
Just do it. Just do H Flood.
No.
You go by Howard Flood on air.
Okay. What about Ho Flow? I think Ho Flow's been taken. H-O-F-L-O.
Well, you could do F-L-O-W.
Okay.
Ho Flow. See, that would work.
That's not bad because, my Facebook
nice
profile about me is I got the Asiatic flow mixed with disco. There you go.
Good Lord. You rhyme as well as you collect money.
That's an Old Dirty Bastard. Classic line, man. Come on.
Never mind.
It was about me.
You've drawn me into a shame trap. I've criticized our Messiah. This show is rough. I've got a gut full of Skittles, man. I started off, like, the fuel I have carrying me through the show right now, it's great that I talk about being overweight. And then I walk past the vending machine after getting cookies, after eating a cheesesteak before the show, and I see that a bag of Skittles is hanging. I mean, like, I don't even... This thing is being held... You know when you properly give it to a chick, and there's, like, just that one bead, that little bridge that's, like, between the lips of the wetness?
Yeah.
Like, less than that is holding this bag of Skittles in place in the vending machine. I'm like, how did that not fall? So for the first 5 minutes... I mean, we laugh at our pets when they just claw at a bag of food, and you're like, oh, dumb animal, look at you. I control all the cards here. I'm not joking. For 5 minutes, just slowly, I'm rocking back and forth the vending machine. I'm like, I can't do this too heavily. Someone's going to come and find me and really judge the hell out of me. So after a while, I'm like, I have to do this, but I effing hate Skittles, but I have to do this. So I shoved the dollar in. I managed to get the twofer.
Okay, good.
And just immediately I'm eating them. I'm like, why, God? Why? Why? Skittles are the worst candy.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that.
Oh, no.
I'm actually a little upset you didn't save me any.
There's a whole bag in the lunchroom. We'll get them between shows. Or we can pause now.
No.
I truly don't care. Yeah, I tried to give away the spare bag. That's how hot a mover Skittles is. First of all, that bag was hanging there by that little, and still no one made the move. They're like, ah, someone else. And then finally, I get the second bag, which you'd think you get the second bag. You did it because each bag ran you 50 cents. Doing that math. See, look at me. Instead, within a minute, like five Skittles into the first bag, I'm just like walking around the halls of the station trying to give away the bag to anyone who will take it. No takers. It was horrible, man.
I was wondering how I showed up 50 minutes late and you're still working on prep. I'm like, dang, I'm really late today.
Oh, I had a whole Skittles adventure. No, I've been here for an hour. I was tweeting about Skittles. I was eating Skittles. Yeah, it was bad. I gave a cookie. I had a gluten-free oatmeal cookie from Mom's Organic Kitchen, and I gave one of those to the guys at the front desk, and then I was like, did they eat it yet? Because now I want to eat it, and I tried to track it down, and then I had a moment of willpower, and I was like, you cannot eat one cookie after you've given it to people, and then I walked off and came here and ate more of my Skittles.
And then you did the show prep for the things that we're about to talk about, right?
Yeah. Well, I had a bunch of prep done. I actually... Again, getting back to the guys on Twitter, I wanted to throw a few more under the bus.
Okay.
Because I routinely crap on Really Profound for not doing reviews for the football show. Because I know he at least listens to that much. And we have a couple other fairly hardcore listeners. Papa Nick, Atlantic Triangle, Cakes UK, Ratty Situation. Those four. That's all I can dig up. But those guys listen a lot, and I just wanted to say hello on air. And then tell them to rate this show on iTunes.
And I will immediately give you your plausible deniability of why you didn't do it, because I can't get my iPad to let me rate the show.
Really?
Yeah. Every time I do the 5-star, it won't. There's no enter button. It won't let me like click on anything to like enter.
Maybe it just has a plausibility thing built in, and it'll accept 3 or lower for our show, but nothing more.
So I don't have iTunes on anything but my iPad, which makes it impossible for me to help us out.
I'll be honest, I don't even think I've rated the show, for God's sake. But you don't do as
John.
I do. Do as I say. All right, we can get to all the stuff that actually happened this week outside of our little lives. I guess first and foremost, what's really on my mind coming in to this show is a topless photo of Keira Knightley. And of course, you hear those words and you're like, why wouldn't that be on your mind? I remember, when did the world first get exposed to Keira Knightley, Howard? Was she the body double for Princess Padme in the really horrible Wars prequel? She was.
Okay.
I remember our good friend Richard Killiam, who is a Star Wars nerd, or at least was in the day, and was obsessed with Natalie Portman.
Yes.
And I remember saying, like, oh yeah, like, Keira Knightley is just her, but... like, not with little stumpy midget limbs. And he was like, get the F out of here. They look nothing alike. The one is beautiful. The other's a dog. And of course, yeah, of course I was vindicated by the fact that, you know, he didn't even realize the one served as a goddamned body and face double in the movies or whatever the hell. You know what I'm talking about,
suck
right?
Suck it, Rich.
Yeah, like Natalie Portman walks around and she's like playing with the little kid that grows up to bang her because those movies are really creepy.
Right.
And then the one that's actually walking around in makeup the whole time, surprise, that one's Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
It wasn't like computer graphics. They just had a different broad. I like that. I like that the one thing they could do easily, they don't.
Yeah. And then they give us Jar Jar Binks.
Exactly. You got where I was going with that. So Friday, an image of Keira Knightley makes the rounds because, again, she has her tits out. Which she's done once or twice. If you've ever suffered through Domino, there was that payoff. I think she gets like banged while she's high in the desert on peyote. Maybe she gets like thrown on top of an iguana. I really don't remember the scene vividly, but you do see him.
You're a little preoccupied. Your mind was elsewhere.
I remember.
I mean, it was there, but you were preoccupied.
I mean, if we're being honest, I remember when I saw that movie, I was living in an apartment with one of my buddies, and I was doing laundry, and it was just, we coughed up for HBO, that was our treat to ourselves, and just out of nowhere, I'm watching this movie, it was on in the background, folding my unmentionables, picking out the laundry sheets, and then I'm like, oh, there's her tits, and I look for 20 seconds, and they go away, and then I go back. That was yeah. It was really earth-shattering. This was not seeing Mimi Rogers. Is that who I'm looking for? Mimi Rogers? Tom Cruise's first wife?
She from the 40-Year-Old Virgin?
No. Hold on. Let me confirm that Mimi Rogers is the most busty thing that they've ever allowed on American television. Yes, Mimi Rogers. Had I been seeing The Masseuse, as I recall the movie being titled, with Mimi Rogers, where she pulls out her just... Those are tits with a capital T-I-T-S, boy. That would have been something to remember. But Keira Knightley, not much up top. Still a beautiful woman, right? we can agree on that?
Yeah.
All right, yes. We took a daring stance there.
By the way, Mimi Rogers was on The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Well, who was she in that one?
She was the love interest.
Mimi Rogers. You too? The one with the huge jugs? No, that was Catherine...
Am I wrong?
That was Being John Malkovich woman.
No.
Catherine Keener?
All right, I'll figure this out.
Yeah. Okay. So, on Friday, Keira Knightley, I guess she's like really enraged about Photoshop and just disgusted with how this culture in general accepts the Photoshopping of women on magazine covers and all that junk. Yeah. What, you're going down the tit rabbit hole really hard there. What are you looking for?
No, keep going.
It's Catherine Keener. That was the love interest in 40-Year-Old Virgin. My brain is starting to rub two little nylon sheaths together again. I'm kind of remembering things.
Keep the roll, man.
Okay. So over the weekend, on Friday, she pulls out her tits, takes a picture, and she's like, I'm doing this without the aid of any sort of Photoshop whatsoever. This image has not been doctored in the least. You with me so far?
Yeah.
So I figure she wants to strike a blow for feminist rights. You know what I mean? She wants to, throw a rock at the statue, if you will. Be like the idol. Be like, hey, look, I put my pants on one leg at a time as well. I think, who was it? Hermione. Whatever the hell that one's name is. They look the same, actually. They're like skinny, crappy little haircuts. I don't remember Hermione's name. Everyone wants to do her. I don't really get it. we're a weird country like that, like the Olsen twins. You know what I mean? It's so like, weird. As long as I saw you when you're 10, I really want to bang you. we have some odd inclinations as a people.
There was the Miley Cyrus countdown to 18. That was really weird.
Yeah, that one too. I guess I was going to say like Miley was a sexier kid, but then I realized I didn't want to take a shovel and dig myself a bit. So they were all gross, and you're right, Howard. The whole point being, like I said, Hermione hated this stuff too, and she was ranting about it, even though she's a really beautiful chick. So on Friday, Keira Knightley says, here's this photo of me, not doctored, striking a blow for the chicks out there. Here you go, my fellow sisters. And I'm expecting her just like unshaven, eating a Big Mac on the toilet. You know, just not at her best. Like, bent over so that even her skinny ass has the sausage roll gut going. You feel me? Like, just one arm up, and you can tell it's been a week since the razor hit it.
Nah, man, because it's still art. Like, she was willing to pose for artistic photography.
Is that it? It wasn't. So, my whole point is, I finally see this photo. I can't find a flaw on it. The woman has the face of an angel. She's skinny in like that. You can't even call it skinny fat. Like, you can tell she doesn't work out much, but she's just skinny. Like, she could live at Golden Corral and that body wouldn't change. It's just that body is unfairness incarnate. You know, as I struggle to hit 2,500 calories a day and still am like grossly piggish and fat for it. You know she eats like a pig and just has that body. And I guess, yeah, we can... What, was she showing off that she doesn't have much in the jug department? And that's supposed to be brave that she's showing us A-cups on this just really, really exquisite frame? I'm not saying it's a particularly sexy frame. Right. It's just artistically beautiful. You know, like, she's very...
It's just the one thing that she would take away from seeing the before and afters, having been a part of the... I'm not saying I've been a part of these types of shoots, but since she has been part of these types of shoots and has seen the before and after, she notices, like, hey, you guys constantly draw me new tits. It kind of bothers me. I get where she's coming from on that, because it's like, what was wrong with the first pick? Do you really need to, like, up that boob to make it look a little bit bigger? Is that necessary? I thought it looked kind of all right before. So for her to actually take the stance of, you know what, as the model, I'm going to have some terms that I dictate to the way that the photography is presented to the public, I think it is a big deal.
All right. The one thing I will give you is the nips, correct me if I'm wrong, kind of look like they're facing in different directions. Am I wrong? And not like, I'm not saying one can't face, you know, 20 degrees left and the other is 20 degrees right. Like, one's kind of down, one's kind of up. It's like when you hit a boxer really hard and punch out, and you're supposed to use the star punch, and his eyes are doing the slot machine thing.
I guess
that's what it looks like.
That's the part of me that would want to ask her, like, why not let him Photoshop it so that the boobs look the same size and that they're pointing the same direction?
Yeah.
Is there a way to do that? Is that... Because this like, two-dimensional version of her just looks like one is a lot bigger than the other, and neither...
Was that the point?
Like, her nipples are wall-eyed.
Yeah, I want her to come out, though, and be like, these are my flaws. They're not obvious because I'm such a 10, but these are the flaws I wanted you to notice.
These are not necessarily even flaws. I think it's just the way she kind of like had her torso turned.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I think she had to ugly herself up. You know what, like tilt, like you said, tilt one toward the camera.
No, it's
be
just,
like, ah, we'll pretend this one isn't perfectly symmetrical.
That's not what they were doing, man. It's just like you take a bunch of shots and then some come out better than others. And this one, I guess they really like the picture of her face. And, you know, like it's kind of unfortunate that it's two dimensional and you can't really like tell that the boobs are the same size because where the camera was placed next to the model.
I can't help but feel this has so completely the opposite effect of what she would have ever wanted it to happen.
I don't know. If part of the goal is to get the people who are selected for these photo shoots to have less done Photoshop-wise, that is a step in the right direction.
Well, what
it's
is
not
she,
like...
What is she trying to hammer home, though? That, hey, when you're working with a stone-cold 10, you don't have to put out much work, you know, not much has to go into this. We don't need to be doctored. Like, I would feel if I were a woman, the one thing I'd want to cling on to is that a lot of work, I mean a lot of work, goes in post-production-wise to making these chicks look as beautiful as they do.
Right.
And instead, this little chippy comes out and is like, yeah, you know, they need 30 seconds to even up my boobs. But otherwise, I'm the real deal. I'm a 10 right out of the... Right at Jump Street.
No, but what would you give her tits then? 1 to 10.
An effing. That's the answer. I'd mash together what was there and cobble together a college effort, man.
Because you're giving her like the totality. You know, if you're gonna like give ratings to women on a scale of 1 to 10, can't you just also break it down to like what are your favorite parts?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I would rate them Rudy because they're undersized but they got heart.
Okay.
They want to fight for you so bad, but they're just not big enough. God help them.
So, yeah, I mean, I get that she looks at him and is like, you know, not my favorite feature. Not perfect.
It reminds me back in the day, there's two Stern references, if you want to know why I do this show. Not one, but two references to the Stern E! Show back in the mid to late 90s. There was a porn star named Houston. And Houston went off the deep end with plastic surgery, but there was a time that Houston was cute. And she came in one time with a block of Lucite that had two what Howard Stern thought were seahorses in it at first. And she comes out and she's like, no, I had a labiaplasty. They chopped off a bit of me down there because I thought I had too much meat in the seat.
Oh.
Now, if Houston in her prime were naked in front of you, certainly, sure, you'd take a KFC wet nap and wipe it off to get the AIDS out. But then you'd go at it. Never, out of 100,000 guys, she could sleep with the entirety of the male population of China. And never would they think, oh, her labia look just 2 centimeters off. Otherwise, mwah, magnifique. You know what I'm saying? That's how I feel about these jugs. Like, it would never cross your mind with her, man. Like, maybe 2 years into the relationship, when you've had your mind completely warped by what you're entitled to, kitty-wise, because you've been sleeping with Keira Knightley for 2 years, and you're like, you know what would be better than Keira Knightley? Keira Knightley with bigger jugs. That's what I deserve now. But it's not going to cross your mind in the heat of the night.
No, I think, like, definitely the shirt would come off, and, like, in my mind, I would have to say, do not show disappointment about, like, the fact that they're not as big as they appeared when they were covered.
I guess, man. It's not like when they were covered, they're particularly gigantic.
And yet, like, I think in your mind, when you let the imagination run, that probably would have been something like, oh, I bet she's got an amazing rack under there. And it's like,
you're just not much. But then you content yourself with the fact that they're not really going to fade either. I don't know.
It's not my thing, man. Honestly, like,
I'm a boob dude. My current chick is packing, like, maybe a small B, full A.
So, I mean, yeah, like, that's why with Keira Knightley, I'm just like, yeah, I get what she's saying. She understands boob guys are not going to be that excited about it.
You work with it. What can I say? It doesn't bother me none. It just...
But going back to, like, I think it's fair for her to be like, hey, no Photoshop. This is a big deal. Like, I'm going to show you that, like, she's not a perfect 10. I'm going to go out there.
I just feel she's so... Look, yeah, I get it. She doesn't have jugs, but, like, especially by the female standard of beauty. Like, you have to understand what girls look for in other girls. Like, realistically...
Do you understand what girls look for in other
girls?
Yeah,
they look for thin. They love thin, and they look for a pretty dome piece. And then, like, lately, because of the rap music, as the kids call it...
Booty.
Like, yeah, exactly. They'll pretend that Nicki Minaj isn't just, like, a pig you'd stick it in and then kick down a staircase. And they're like, look at her ass. It's so big. Like, they all try to do the Sir Mix-a-Lot thing, where it's like, oh, my God, Becky, except not doing it in a derisive manner.
I still don't understand the skinny thing. I really don't. Like, as far as why does everybody have to strive to have the diet of a starving Ethiopian? Like, that's the part that kind of weirds me out about modeling.
It's not even that they want the diet. They, in fact, I think would be turned off if they thought that a lot of starvation went into it. What they want is, and this plays into, it's funny you bring this up. This was actually my next point. What they want is the person who looks that good, and they believe it's because they do 15 minutes of Stairmaster after eating, like I said, like a BK meal. Like, yeah. Jennifer Lawrence will be like, oh, I'm just such a fat pig. I ate a burger. Oink, oink, look at me. And you're just like, shut the F up. Really shut up. Like, I have a friend of mine, a chick named Kiara. And Kiara is like this statuesque, she's like, I think, Jamaican and Asian.
Yeah.
And she's like she acts in a nerdy way, don't get me wrong, but she models. And it's not like you looked at her and thought, you couldn't model. You looked at her and you're like, oh, you should model.
Right.
You're 5'10 and have a body like I don't know what. And she'll tweet every so often or put on Instagram, like, just pictures of food. And she's like, oh, this is me joining the fat kids club. And, okay. You know, and it's like a picture of, like I said, burger, fries, pizza, soda, whatever the hell garbage she's putting in.
Yeah.
And to me, I find that horribly, horribly angering.
Yeah.
Because the fat kids club is not what you eat. You're just the junk food eaters club.
Yeah.
The fat kids club is what you join when you look like what you should after eating that crap. And she never will. She'll just never have metabolism that fails. She works out on top of it. It drives me nuts.
Yeah.
When people are like, oh, I'm so fat, because they eat poorly and they still look perfect. And same, that's going back to Keira Knightley, man. To be like, oh, I understand your burden, women. Here are my boobs that aren't so big because I'm just so goddamn naturally skinny. No one sees that and is like, fight the fight, sister. They're just like, oh, just shut the F up. Please just shut the F up. It was the same thing.
I mean,
going back to the second Stern reference. Sorry to trample you there.
Yeah.
Going back to the second Stern reference I promised to make. There was a dude named Norm Zeta, as I recall. He used to have, Al Goldstein, I think, from Screw magazine on every so often. And he had Norm Zeta from Perfect 10. And Norm went on and had the balls to be like, yeah, Perfect 10 is out there for girls so that they can draw inspiration and realize that they don't need surgery to look like a Perfect 10. And it has the opposite effect. It has a deflating effect. Women psychologically can arm themselves by saying, like, hey, look, if I had 20K to put into going under the knife, you know what I mean? Like, I could look like that woman. And to be like, nah, you're really far off, surgery or not. You know, like, even without surgery, there's so many women out there that just make you look like an effing hog. Like, that's what it actually translated to. And that's really what I feel about Keira Knightley, man. It was saying, like, yeah, my boobs are too small, but I'm still a 10. This is me completely undoctored. You used to be able to say, hey, I'd look kind of like that if I had movie magic in my corner. But no, it's not the case. This is me completely undoctored, and I'm still much better looking than you'll ever be. They could put more CGI into you than they did Robert Patrick in Terminator 2. I'd still look better.
I think it's a good move on her part, like, because we're not going to change beauty standards overnight. So for her to take a step and say, hey, listen, let's just put it out there for what I really am, as opposed to, like, the actual improved version, because that's what they've been doing. There's an improved version of her that doesn't exist in reality that is constantly being portrayed in all kinds of magazines. And I get why she would be pissed off about that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a degree of difference where, like, you might think it's out of touch, but I don't know. I guess maybe, like, part of this is me being another person of a, like, powerful metabolism who...
Yeah. I do hate you for that.
Yeah. But I mean, like...
You skinny bitch.
Just going back to, like, my one thing in life where I was like, you know, I mean, people get on my case for that, but the one thing I've always remembered is, like, going to the gym and realizing I have never done it, and I probably will never bench 225 pounds. You know what I mean?
Oh, you mean like the Hercules sitting across from you?
No, but this is what I'm saying. It's just like, there are things. I've met many women who are just like, nah, he's too skinny.
No kidding.
Because you know me, I kind of like the sisters. That's like the primary group where it's just like...
I thought a lot of skinny guys had like that John Holmes dong. Like, I thought that was the side effect of being skinny. Like, I don't think many skinny guys aren't packing. I always just assumed they had pretty big ones. Like a fat guy, like Penn Jillette.
Right.
Like, I always assume he has nothing.
So
like,
weird.
Penn Jillette just seems like he has a tiny dong.
No, I think pretty much anyone who does, like, comedy podcasting is just, like, blessed with a mediocre, like, package, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not disproving anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not going to see me do a photo shoot.
We've talked about this before on, like, shows years back. I think we're both squarely in median. We're both larger than Howard Stern.
I used to be, like, way bigger. Like, when I was young
and
weighed, like, 140, I was, like, packing 7. And now I'm, like, struggling for a cig. Like, if I don't even pull out a ruler anymore because I'm like, why would I check? A, it's not doing anything. B, it ain't going to grow. And, yeah, I got no C. C, it's just sad. See, I'm still sitting at a desk, my childhood desk, with my childhood ruler. Measuring it like a kid in Oklahoma against the side of an oak tree.
Earlier in the show, when you were talking about urinating in your green tea mug and just setting it next to your bed, it reminded me of your childhood bedroom where you still do sleep.
Yeah.
And like when we were kids, you actually like pointed out to me once, like, hey, yo, look behind the bed, like the door. Yeah. Behind, like, my bedroom
door.
Forgot
that was my jizz spot.
Yeah. And you're just like, you point out, like, after a certain point, you didn't even want to, like, find something to splooge in and then, like, flush down the toilet.
Yeah.
You just straight up, like, right behind the door because you were like, what? It's not like my mom's ever going to see it because the only time she comes in here, the door's open.
Yeah, that's true. I just had a corner I made in, like, a dog. Thank God I took out that carpet.
Is that what happened? So she never found it.
Yeah, she never took out like a CSI blue light, you know.
I've always figured that there'd be this one day where she'd walk in, she'd shut the door and be like, oh, what happened there? I think I should smell that.
Oh, yeah, she has to, like the corner's upturned and she has to fold it out with a hammer.
Ew.
No, that never happened. I ripped it out.
Did you save it?
Yeah. Exactly.
It's framed.
They'll save it for the Marconi Museum. Like, one of the world's greatest voices. This is his baby semen. No, I just go in tissues, but then you can never really angle that correctly, so it's It kind of just dribbles. Like, you just go on tissues, but the tissues aren't ultra-absorbent. Yeah. So then you're just looking at tissues as it dribbles over the side. You're like, I could have done that better. And then you give, like, a little sock wipe or just, you know, you do what you can. But
you think at age 34 you'd have figured out by now?
I mean, look, a lot less gets on the floor than used to. But, yeah, if you put a UV light in front of my computer, it'd look like a Pollock.
Oh, crap, we're 33, my bad.
Yeah, you just turned 33. Yeah. I still got, 4 months before 34, something like that. So,
You got time to figure out, like, an alternative to the tissue. That's one of those rules, age 34.
In theory, a woman's mouth, but not happening anytime soon. And I don't have a dog, so. Just go on the carpet and throw a treat in the middle. That's the worst, though. Even my cats will go through the trash can every night, and sometimes I'll just heave it in the bathroom trash can, and I'll have to, like, you know, rediscard the thing. I'm just like, I hope you're hard by now. I hope you have become armadillo shell hard. Because if I touch wetness, I will vomit. Oh, yeah, exactly. Your little cats that lick your face, they've been gnawing on your jizz rags and your floss. Yeah, they lick the whole family's faces. Oh, I should probably get in the practice of flushing those. That would be nice. That would be good of me. Speaking of things that are good and bad, I have no segue here. This is called Speaking Of, getting to part two of the show. The Newsroom came back last night. Do you watch The Newsroom at all, Howard?
No, I've heard rave reviews. My girlfriend is a big fan. We have yet to get into this season. I think the dispute is whether I should try to watch previous seasons first, or if I should just hop in and in the deep end and just suck it up and read a wiki page to catch me up to the story.
That would be crappy of her. Like, no joking, that would be crappy of her if she made you just watch it in the now. Like,
no, I would prefer it almost.
Oh, would you?
Yeah,
Then do that. I mean,
I did it with Lost. I was just like, what's this show? Came in season 3. People were like, you should watch from the beginning. I was like, how about I look at Wikipedia?
Oh, no.
And then, yeah.
Well, that blows up in your face for Lost, man. I've heard, like, season 1 is the only good thing.
Season 3 and 4, I think.
That's like, I'm going to get into the Rolling Stones circa Bridges to Babylon.
But the reason I was cool with doing that with Lost is, you know, I watched seasons 3 and 4, and I think, you know, 5 is where it really started to get boring to me. I was like, this seems stupid. So I just checked out. I wasn't one of these people who had, like, invested 4 seasons and felt like I was just like, nah, I'm bored now. I'm going to check out. I doubt this will end well.
All right. Well, Newsroom is starting its 3rd and final season. And who's it? Jeff Daniels, right? Dumb and Dumber. He's the main guy.
Yes.
And then there's the British broad from Match Point.
Okay.
She's the love interest. There's a lot of British broads in Matchpoint, come to think of it. The one that the Jonathan Rhys Davies or whatever.
Okay.
Rhys Davies, I don't know. The one that he winds up with. It got me thinking about the nature of writing for television. I've been looking into doing some sort of writing with my life just because the locksmith thing is, it's difficult. It's difficult. It's not rewarding. It pays all right. But I want to be a creative boy. And in addition to The Newsroom, which I've watched the first 2 seasons, I did not watch last night's because I'm actually now giving preference to my Showtime Sunday shows, The Affair and not Sunday Night Football last night when the Packers savagely raped the Bears.
Right.
But we'll get to that on the football show, PF Pod, Papa's Football Podcast. But The Affair, yeah, I've been doing The Affair and Homeland. So I will get to Newsroom today. And in addition to all that crap I've been watching, whenever I hang out with the girl, I've been doing Gilmore Girls on Netflix.
Okay.
Laugh all you want.
I've seen a bit of Gilmore Girls, not a lot.
It's if you've seen one episode, you have more than seen them all.
It's soap opera-esque.
I wouldn't go that far. It's the writing, which I want to, again, debate something with you. Because a friend of mine, Erin, she and I got into this over the phone a couple days ago. I contend that a show like The Newsroom, done by Aaron Sorkin, or Gilmore Girls, which is crapped out by Amy Sherman-Palladino, a lot of people really like their writing because, according to Aaron, the term is they have a strong voice, these writers. And anytime you see something done by Sorkin, The Social Network, The West Wing, The Newsroom, it takes you about 5 seconds before you're like, this is an Aaron Sorkin joint. Everyone is, very, I want to say they're verbose. Everyone's super intelligent.
Right.
Like, I would love to see Aaron Sorkin do a show about janitors because they would be the smartest goddamn janitors
right.
you have ever seen in your life. Oh, that would be a witty bunch of janitors. And same with Gilmore Girls. Everyone is very, very witty. The repartee that just crackles back and forth between these people. It's absurd. There's nothing real about it. Real people do not talk this way. Like, if you want to say one person in this entire world has that level of smarts, that's fine. Like, there's one person in this entire universe I've created who talks this well. That's cool.
Right.
They populate their entire universe with just versions of them. People who are so freakishly intelligent and so able to communicate that they have a job off of it. You know what I'm saying? They're that outlandishly good at what they do, and instead they turn around and they don't write shows that contain real characters where, like, there are some dumb people.
Right.
And there are some quiet people. And there are some people who aren't into, I'm thinking more Gilmore Girls now, but who aren't into, like, quirky 60s and 70s music and stuff like that. They don't care, though, to make a real world with 3D characters. And she was arguing my friend Aaron was arguing that doesn't make them poor writers, necessarily. It just means they have a strong voice, and it's fine that the world is populated with a bunch. Like, The Newsroom is just a bunch of Aaron Sorkins. You haven't watched it yet.
Right, but I know the idea that you're describing behind it. I would agree with your friend that they're not necessarily poor writers, but I wouldn't say that it's just that they have a strong voice. It's what they know how to do best. And
that's
so,
what drives me nuts. Like, when you write, like, let's do Harry Potter, for example. I read Harry Potter, like, there's a line, Hermione, she's very smart. Yeah. You get me?
Right.
Harry, he ain't the smartest, but he's not dumb. Ron, kind of dumb. You know, there's a sliding scale here. Like, if something comes out of Hagrid's mouth, I understand it's a Hagrid line. Like, if Hermione said it, I'd be like, why is she talking about hippogriffs like this? And Dobby. Like, these people couldn't even make Dobby because they wouldn't be able to make a character that just says one word over and over. Or whatever the hell. Did Dobby just say Dobby over and over? I don't remember.
I'll say this with it. This will hopefully hit close to home because you're on radio, but my understanding of radio and why do people listen to radio is that you do want a strong voice. You want to, like, feel the take of the person that is the radio personality because you want that predictability almost. You may not know exactly what they're going to say, but you know they're going to have a certain approach.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's what you really enjoy. And I think the version of television writing that you're describing that you're objecting to is very similar. Where you do watch an Aaron Sorkin show because you like that style of dialogue.
No, you absolutely do. You're right. I think there's something wrong with that. To be like, to say that you're a writer in the same way that, like, I don't know, what was it? Did Tolstoy do Crime and Punishment? Am I right there so far?
And War, What Is It Good For?
Yeah, exactly.
Was the sequel.
Exactly. All right. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that he made characters that didn't all sound like Tolstoy. I actually read that book, too. I just don't remember it, like, at all. With a gun to my head, I wouldn't remember a single thing about it. You know, Raoul Dahl, he did James and the Giant Peach. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
He made James. James wasn't just Raoul Dahl talking.
See,
he made fleshed out characters.
I think it's slightly unfair to compare a book to television or a play. I think the difference being that a lot of people who write want their voice heard much easier in a book because you have a narrator. You can really get yourself reflected and put more into these characters being characters.
All right, then I will cite again to show just how deep I go with the arts. I'll cite King of the Hill. King of the Hill did an amazing job of having characters with very distinct personalities. And like I said, if a line came out of Bill's mouth, you knew it was a Bill line. Like if Dale stopped talking about conspiracies and started talking about missing his wife and wanting to eat all the time, you'd be like, why is Dale talking like Bill? If I took the lines of Jeff Daniels and I put them in the mouth of the British broad on the Newsroom, and, you know, I got the genders sorted out, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference with a damn gun to your head.
Look, I accept your idea that it could be better. There is a way to improve upon that single voice approach to writing, but I don't think it's wrong. I think that there's a way to, you know, maybe do that as part of your career. But you should, if you're going to be known as a great writer, show a little more versatility.
Okay.
Than that.
You made the point, really, that I, again, a lot of people are cool with that. Kevin Smith built a career on it. Every character is Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm like you. I find it, that's really what I'm looking for here. I find it limited. If that's your only trick, to just write a bunch of characters that are you.
But if it's entertaining, I'm not going to fault you for it. Because we should all be able to, like, do this somehow, some way. The reality is, not everybody's going to have appeal. So, not everybody is going to have that entertainment value that they bring to the table when they do that. But the people who do it, I don't fault them for not trying to expand and go beyond that into other things, but they really should.
Why do you think they don't do it? Is it a limitation? Like, does Aaron Sorkin stay up at night, like, so help me God, I wish I could write a dunce, and he just can't?
No, I think it's
hey, this is my paycheck, F it.
I think it's more like that mortgage isn't going to pay itself. Like, okay. I need to do what I know works.
Yeah.
Like, I can either be comfortable or I can take a risk and potentially just, like, rely on Medicare as I near the end of my days. You know, I get why he wouldn't want to take that risk. It's not.
Okay. No,
you're
right. The
benefits are much better.
I find it a little gutless, too. I truly do.
So, who knows? Maybe he does have side projects, or he's like Dave Grohl. I think Dave Grohl's one of those rock stars now who only writes the hits. You know, there's no, like, personal inspiration when he, like, puts pen to paper. That's just, like, what's going to get airplay?
Oh, I think a lot of people would debate that. I don't know. I'm with you on Dave Grohl like that.
No, he admits that.
Does he really?
Yeah, no.
Good for him.
You got to watch
Sonic
Dude
Highways?
No.
Is that the new one?
He did it's kind of a joke interview. It's with him and the bald dude from Tenacious D, KG.
Oh, Kyle Gass?
Yeah.
Or Glass.
So KG and Dave Grohl have this great interview. Oh, man, you have to watch this. It's basically just an interview of, like, how do you write songs? And basically, they together, Dave points out why, like, he doesn't write songs unless it's for radio. Because, you know, like, this house isn't going to pay for itself. They're doing an interview at his mansion. And then, like, he works with KG to write a song quickly. Just a chorus. Life's the bitch, keep on trucking. And they just come up with this off the fly. It's just like, you know, you need something that people can get behind. You know, you got to go Aerosmith with it.
Yeah.
And they're just like, every Aerosmith song is just chorus, chorus, pre-chorus, chorus.
Yeah.
And it's just like, because he was just honest. He's like, sing one verse from an Aerosmith song. Just one verse.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it. You know their choruses, but it doesn't matter because white people love the chorus that Aerosmith puts out there. And you need some stupid phrase like, life's a bitch, keep on trucking. And it's great.
God, I want to hear that song.
Yeah, no, dude, it's fantastic. It's a great interview. People should check it out. But yeah, I think that's where Aaron Sorkin is with his writing too, where it's just like, you know, I guess I could push the limits of what I want to do as a writer, or I just want to make more money.
I don't know.
This works. I'm good at it. Why would I push my boundaries?
I don't know if this preys upon my stereotypes, because you say that, but I feel, at least for the longest time, I'm not talking current 65-year-old looks like your grandmother, Steven Tyler, but I want to think that for the first 20 or so years, Aerosmith really put out a song and they thought that was the best they could do at the time. You know, like Love in an Elevator, they really thought they were putting, that was their Brahms, that was their Bach at the moment. They're like, that Love in an Elevator, that is where I was at that time in my life, man. Whereas Sorkin and the broad from Gilmore Girls, I really do feel that a big chunk of them realizes, like, I am limited when I do this. Like, you know what I'm saying? The rock star, the John Bon Jovi, he's like, this is what I do. This is what I can do. Whereas the writer, the self-aware, the analytical being here, you know, not just the goddamn cock with lungs behind a microphone, like, they should know better. That's what I feel the difference is. They should know, like, I am churning out crud, and this should eat me up inside.
But Aaron Sorkin is not churning out crud.
He's just churning out Aaron Sorkin, though.
And it's fun. I bet he enjoys it. Whereas what you're describing sounds potentially like work, and it may not be very rewarding for him. So I wouldn't fault him if he's just like, I haven't really done that before. I guess I could, but it's just going to kind of not inspire me. And like, isn't it even worth your time if it's uninspired writing? If
he's going to. It's so weird to me, though, that he could sit there and then just write like, here's me talking to me, talking to me, talking to me. It's perfect.
It's just, I don't know, like, I write a lot of boring stuff in my real life.
Uh-huh.
It's just about the law, and it's like academic articles at times. So for me, I enjoy writing that style, and nobody reads it because nobody reads that garbage. But if I had the ability, like him, to take that type of activity and turn it into, like, a narrative with multiple characters, all basically saying the things I want to say, but making it interesting to the public at large, I would do that. I would absolutely do that.
Yeah, this is where you can laugh at me. Like, please tweet at Papa's Basement if you've made it this far and laugh at how ridiculous the things you're about to hear are. But I do my dumb little comic hosted at thespookiescomic.com. The comic's right. Called The Spookies. And it's got really three main characters. And anytime I churn out a strip, for the most part, it's just me talking to me talking to me. Those are the three characters. And it can be very funny, but it feels so cheap. It feels like such low-hanging fruit, dude. I'm like, there is no differentiation between these guys. You could switch them around, just switch the lines. It wouldn't matter. Unless, you know, there's the little guy and the big guy. Like, the big guy can't talk about being little. That's about it. That's really it. And so I am not equating people who have successful TV writing careers with what I've learned doing a comic strip for 1 year.
No, man, I think it's fair to have some criticism, because the one thing I'm going to defend you on, and this is my point at which where I have a pet peeve when people do this, because this is such a common theme throughout literature and movies and television. It's that that stock character of the precocious child. Of the child who speaks like an adult.
Oh.
It really helps to facilitate the plot line.
Oh, God. Oh.
It's a sign of weak writing. Now, like, it can occur within a relatively good work. I do groan whenever I see this character pop up. However, even though it is the stock cliche go-to that a lot of people use, it can be done well. And so, like, I always get on people's case for using it. But, you know.
The only kid I want to see in a movie is a kid petting a bird that had its head fall off. And goddamn Jim Carrey just sold it to him. That's it. That's a kid being funny in a movie. That's otherwise out.
What about the kid who let the emu... from The Candidate, there's that one scene that you post occasionally.
Which one?
Where everybody's telling Zach Galifianakis... within his family about bad things they'd done that could come out later.
That's pretty good.
So the lines they gave those two little kids were amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ricky Bobby's two kids are okay, too.
Yeah.
He says, I'll come at you like a spider monkey. Not so bad. I'm hopped up on Mountain Dew. Yeah. Those are pretty solid. All right. All right. I will concede defeat in all of these things.
Nah, I mean, it's just there are problems. There are problems with... cutting it short on what you think is great, because the reality is, who's necessarily gonna be watching Aaron Sorkin in 20-30 years? That's like the great measuring stick for all these things, I feel like. Who can actually survive the test of time?
Yeah, well, considering like you don't even see The Social Network on HBO anymore, I think you have your answer. Whatever. All right, Howard, let's get out of here. We can I'll use my distinct voice to probably say my first and last name on the air for the first time this entire episode. I'm John Papa Giorgio. This was Papa's Basement. I was joined today by Howard Flood. If you liked the show, first of all, why? Second of all, go to inpapasbasement.com. We have all of our old episodes there, all of our social media links, a bunch of writing as well. If you're too lazy to go there, I think you can noodle out what to look up to find us. It's facebook.com/papasbasement, @papasbasement. I'm very active on Twitter, so please give me a shout there. If you do iTunes or Stitcher, you can use those to subscribe to the show. And if you do so, please give us a 5-star rating. Tell your friends. I mean, I kind of say this mechanically at the end of every episode and make it sound like something you'd hear at the end of a, you know, an ad for new medicine where it's like, may cause anal bleeding and death. But I want you to pay attention and actually do these things. Do tell your friends. Word of mouth in theory works. I don't really believe that, but in theory, again, it should. Also, Papa's Football Podcast. You can noodle that one out. We're based in America, not Europe, so it's good football. Not the gay kind. I got a laugh out of Howard. PFpod.com for that, but you can also find it on Stitcher and iTunes. Again, Papa's Football Podcast. Last but not least, thespookiescomic.com, a comic I write better than Sorkin does the newsroom, baby. And we are out of here.
We're home free. School's out, baby.
Good show.
Nothing to talk about. Nothing to critique. Great show. Great guest tomorrow. You go home, have a glass of wine, whack off. I'll see you tomorrow.
That's the post-show critique?
Yeah. You're the best.
It's my time to go. I successfully burned all my bridges. Nobody loves me, and I don't love nobody.
Then he said penis.
Yeah. Then he said masturbation.
Then he said vagina. That was cool.
Had a mighty hard time, but I'm on my way. Had a mighty hard time, but I'm on my way. It's a mighty hard climb, but I'm on my way.